Hi, every so oh, okay, there we go. What's going on? How's everybody doing today? It is a great day. Welcome to the another podcast show of the I Am Shatoria podcast, where I'm your host, Shatoria Christian, and I pray you guys are well. To everybody who can see, who can hear me, I'm waving. How you doing? And then to all those who can see me, hey, how you doing? We are here. And so for those that cannot see, we have a disclaimer today for today's show. So I'm going to put that disclaimer out first and then we'll get into the show. But we have a disclaimer out there today. And so the disclaimer is, and it says, mature content warning, please be advised that this content that this contains adult content. This includes conversation and information of sexual and graphic content and violence. Listener's discretion is advised. I'm going to say it again. Listener discretion is advised. So I need everybody to definitely hear me. And we're going to keep that scrolling for this whole particular show. I had it in the opener. And so I want to make sure that we have it out here. And so as we are here together, we are, if you have not, if you've been keeping up with us and been watching the episodes in season five, you know, we are talking about my book, Authentic Transparency, Forgiveness to Freedom. And we are getting into the realness today with this one. We are in chapter four. And if you know, you know, okay, chapter four. Seven, that is the chapter. So as I've been saying over the last couple of weeks, you definitely want to make sure that you are getting, get your tissue and everything, especially for this episode, because I will be doing this one alone. As we are talking about some things. So, definitely make sure you are prepared for this conversation as I am preparing myself for this conversation. And I knew as I was getting into this book that this conversation would be the conversation of all conversations. And so if you do not have this book, make sure you know to get your copy, get your signed copy at iamshatoria.com/merch. Where you can get the book from me and I will sign it and send it to you, or you can go to Amazon or any, you know, other places to get it for sure. But yeah, make sure you go to iamshatoria.com. And so as we've already been talking about chapters, this is chapter four. So we've done the fear not, we've done the foundation, we've done the order of freedom, we've done, a child's fear, we've done all those things. And so, and now we are talking about seven. And so if you have not been keeping up with us and these books, these chapters, I think it's your best if you definitely start from the beginning so you can have a concept of what I'm talking about as I am getting into these books. So like I said, we've done the Order of Freedom and Foundation in one episode. Then we did a Child's Fear and then we did Fear Not. Now we are into seven. So here's the thing. This is what God be doing some things. The spirit be really be playing y'all for real, because the Order of Freedom is the chapter or the space where I am talking about what we're about to like dive into, what it's about. It's the introduction of my book. And I am talking about what we are getting into, what we're about to go for. And it's funny because the chapters did not come until later. And so we're talking about, the order of freedom and what it is to get to that particular place, freedom. And one of the biggest things is the vulnerability I have had to have in order to get to that place. Just like right now, speaking to you about this, you know, letting you know, hey, we're about to get into this. And mature content warning. I cannot say that enough because of the content of the things that we're going to say. And then we got into chapter one, which was about foundation. And here's the thing about foundation. Foundation just always lays the ground to what we're going to get into, what we're talking about. And that just with the life foundation has to be set in order for people to have a understanding of what we're doing. In our life, you can't do anything without a foundation. And that's just that. You cannot do anything without a foundation. And then we went into a child's fear in chapter 2, where we talked about what fear looked like and what I feared. And it's crazy because I feared my mother. And that is amazing to hear myself say that out loud, fearing my mother. And that was funny because as we got into Fear Not, I talked about fearing my mother. But that's crazy. But yeah, that's real life right here. And so now we're into 7, where my fears, even though now as an adult, you know, God is showing me revelations of these stories, but my fears really did some things in this status. And so yeah, we're going to talk about that. And so as we talk about that again, make sure, like I said, if you know, you know, this is one of the longest chapters in my book. It was one of the hardest chapters to write in my book. And so we are going to talk about it. And we're going to talk about the concept of adultification that goes with this. We're going to get into it. Again, grab your tissue, grab your book. If you do not have this book, please go to iamshatoria.com/merch to get you a copy of this book. And again, we are talking about chapter 4, which is called 7. And I say mature content warning. Please be advised that this content contains adult content. This includes conversations and information of sexual and graphic content and violence. Listener discretion is advised. And as I sit here, I'm getting my life together, y'all, as we are talking about this subject. And so here's the thing about it. One of the things that I realized that I am as a mother, I'm very clear about my daughter staying a child. I'm very clear about, I'm not overly protected over her, because I trust my God, but I also trust the people in my space. And that's where the difference comes in, that is trusting the people in your space. And so one of the things I had to learn was that my healing as an adult could not take place in my child. My healing could not take place in her, because I don't need to add on the fear to her that was added on to me. So the healing that I needed in my life could not involve her in that aspect, because I then take the pain and I put it onto her, and that is not what we are ordained or gained to do. And so I am so glad that God started to work on me in my healing before she came into the picture, despite the fact she was already a desire of my heart. So with her being a desire of my heart, I had to get some things in line in order to have the desires of my heart. And the Bible speaks about having a desire, take delight in the Lord, he give you the desires of your heart. And so I really had to understand that, yes, she was a desire of my heart. However, me being unhealed was not going to bring her here. And that was part of the healing that I had to do with my mother, this particular incident that turned into a year incident. And one of the things is, it's been quiet long enough. I've been quiet about it. I haven't spoken about it. Crazy part, I never told my husband about it. I never spoke of it. I kept it and I held on to it. I didn't tell my grandmother. I didn't tell anyone. I held it. I consumed it. And if you read my book, then you know in the next chapter, which is another episode, it spilled over into that lane of my life, it well into adulthood. So this chapter did a lot of damage to me in my life, to where it also allowed me to heal in ways that I did not know was possible. And so my healing definitely took place before my daughter's presence. And I'm glad I got it done with, because I'm able to handle situations when it comes to her in aspects of identity, the sexual content that we're going to discuss tonight. So I am very blessed that this healing consumed before she was here, because I don't think, I can tell you now, I've watched people consume their kids' life with what has happened because they have not yet healed from that. And people will tell you, oh, you can't heal from that. You can't tell people to let it go. No one is saying to let it go. However, when you hold on to it, you are now bringing it into a space where those who don't even have it as a issue, you bring it to them as a issue. And that is one of the things I did not want to do for my daughter, is bring this situation into an issue. So one of the things that I will say is I've always been very cautious after her about the friendships that I had and the people and the things and those type of things. Me and my husband's been very intentional about certain things with her. Who she's around, who's talking to her, who anything. And we've trusted God with the decisions that we have made. And so I'm very blessed for that. So one of the things about this chapter is that we get real in it about the adultification of being a molestee. But however, I tell people all the time, here's the biggest thing. I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor to the fullest of the doubt. And I'm very, very grateful for that, being a survivor. And being a survivor, it requires a lot of healing and a lot of forgiveness. And I'm telling you now, because it requires so much, you can't get to the freedom you need and desire until you completely heal and truly allow yourself to be in that space of vulnerability. A lot of us are where we at because we won't talk about it. Family secrets are enough. And so this being a family secret, I'm calling what it is. I don't care which family member getting their feelings about it. Call it what it is. This is where issues lies. And so because I never told family until later, my mother and my grandmother found out later because we talked about it. And this was actually in 2013. I talked about it with my mother first, hence where our healing started to happen when I had a conversation, because again, at this time I hadn't had a conversation, with her. And so one of the things about it is, I questioned, did she know? A lot of times people, they know, but I questioned, well, God, did she know? Did she know what was going on? Did she know what had happened? My sister's them story are not mine to tell. But let's just say this is a reoccurring issue and a reoccurring issue of not talking about it. And so I advise those who are out there, talk about it. Let me tell you something. You may lose family members and that's quite okay, but talk about it. Because at the end of the day, it's your healing, not theirs. They're going to want to shut you down. They want to make you be quiet, but it is your healing, not theirs. And so one of the biggest things that I'm truly blessed for is that I was able to heal in this process in order to get past it. So one, you know, my mom had friends. And so one of the issues that really aligned is, if you heard my last episode, talked about my mom getting baptized. And so one of the things that really struck my mother was the death of my stepfather, my two middle sisters, their dad. And his death really changed the course of our home. I mean, our home had already changed up a little, shifting a little bit, but it changed the course of our home. That was the love of her life. I mean, it was what it was. And so my mom was really just out there just searching. And my mom did not realize the pain of her decisions and what they would cause. But at the same time, my mother was not in her right mind. My mom was a drug addict. So my mom was not in her right mind. But at the same time, my mom also wasn't a healed individual anyway. She had children and she wasn't even healed. So her issues that she had placed on us, that's real life. That's what it was. And so one of the hardest things to do was, no kidding, sit and go, man, like, mom, do you not see what's going on? And at that time, as an adult, I realized, no, she didn't. No, she didn't know. No, it just was not in her face. And part of me in my head at that time as a child was like, I hate her. I hated her because I felt like, ain't no way you can't see this. And it wasn't until I was an adult, until I had a revelation and God had to show me that, no, she didn't see it because unfortunately she was impaired. And we're not just talking about to drugs and alcohol. We're talking about just life itself impaired her. My mother was a prisoner in her own mind because she was hurt. She was in pain and she did not know how to cope of losing someone that she loved, despite the fact how toxic that was. She just didn't know how to cope. And unfortunately, being the oldest, I took a lot of the heat of some of the things that had happened. And so my mom had friends. And she had a particular friend, and who I would not name. I did not name him in my book either. But this friend in the book, I called him the thief. And so the thief was this guy that my mom, I don't think my mom was in love with him or nothing like that. I think it was a bypass time. My mom liked men. If men can do things for her, that is what it was, because we did struggle. We was part of the government. And so being underneath the government, oh my God, y'all don't understand. This is the one rule about my life I stand on. As I became an adult, it was, I would not live on assistance. The government would not be part of my space or my life. And I wound up doing the military. But what I mean by that was no food stamps, no anything. You have no reason to be in my house. I don't need no CPS. I don't need no nothing, because I grew up with it. And so people laugh at me like, girl, you better take them food stamps. No, I'm okay. Because I've lived in that life and I didn't like it then. I don't like it now. I am quite okay. Because at the end of the day, living in that space really damaged my heart, my soul of people and things. And so my whole goal when I turned 18, and I never forget, my grandma was like, after you graduate, you're not getting no more checks. I was like, well, okay, cool beans. And I had a whole concept of, I will not live by this standard. I won't do it. And so we lived by this standard. We had the government cheese, bread, peanut butter, you name it, I had it. And so I remember living, where we lived at was over by the old Turner Stadium. It was the Braves Stadium in Fulton County. It was the old one that got torn down or whatever. But I remember it living, the house was green. I remember it being on the corner. And I won't say it was a project, but it was definitely a rundown neighborhood. But y'all, let me tell you the memories. There are parts of good memories in that neighborhood. As I was in third grade in that one. Now, this was early third grade. And so I went like second and third grade here, but I remember the streets with the water, the fire hydrant. And so I remember us taking the fire hydrant out and those things. I remember that as it was yesterday. But I also remember living in this house. This house had the kitchen in the back of the house. And so where the front was, you had the living room, you had the bedrooms, and then you had the bathroom. The hallway was pretty long. So you had a pretty long hallway that went all the way to the back, and the kitchen was in the back. And so I remember this so clearly. And you guys have to forgive me as I am. Again, I am okay, but it still brings emotions because first of all, I praise God how far I've come. And the healing that I've gotten from it. So I remember us at one point having to sleep on a mattress in front of the stove in this house because we didn't have any electricity. I remember the doors being burglar bar. I remember my mom finding out that my stepdad was killed. We was in this house when that happened. Remember this, it was yesterday. And we're living in this home and it was just dark. And to this day, I see this house as being dark. But this is also when I realized Tori wanted to be a teacher, because we had these white walls, and I so remember two beds in this one room that I shared with my siblings. And I remember writing on the walls in green crayon. And you know, crazy about my mom let me. So we were writing on the walls in green crayon. And I remember even going, I remember the first day of school, we had the little white kid shoes. And I remember, I don't know if you guys all remember, when you tie your shoes, it has a little clip on it so your shoe don't come untied. I so remember that. I had a Snoopy one. Wow. I remember that. I had a Snoopy one for that. And so I remember, you know, getting ready for school. And so my mom had this friend, y'all, and he was a big dude. And I'm going to read what I wrote, but it says he was a man that was kind of fat with a very round shaped head. With his round head, he was slightly bald with his ugly mustache. It was thick, dark, messy looking, and covered up the top of his lip. He smelled like a summer sweat. And though it was he thought he was the coolest man that would enter the room. He had the weirdest walk, as if he was walking side to side, just like a child taking their first steps. Beside the bad look, he had a bad looking truck. It was a brown truck that made the worst noise. Sounded like it was coughing every time he drove it. I hated to be around him, and the word hate I don't use lightly. I was annoyed by him and very uncomfortable. Even his hello never sat well with me. So let me tell you something. I've come to learn in my life that God has blessed me with the spirit of discernment even as a child. However, I didn't have the voice to be able to translate this thing here. And so everything about him, I despise. Very uncomfortable with him. And there was not too many people I was uncomfortable with. But he made me very uncomfortable. And the crazy part about it is I wasn't uncomfortable around men in that level until him. My mom had men around all the time, and they never made us feel any type of way. Like, they just ain't. It was, you know, it was always a, hey, you know, you had a couple of uncles. It was like, hey, uncle, hey, you know, that's what it was. And then we had our Uncle James, dopest dude ever. We had our Uncle James, and oh my God, I love my Uncle James, which was my mom's actual brother. I loved him. And, but this dude, just the thief, oh my God, it just, his presence was just horrible. And his smell, everything just, it irked my whole being of a person. And remind you, I was a child, I was 7. And so, it was just uncomfortable. And so, his mere presence just, ew, it, yeah. And you know how they say there's a thief in the night? He was the thief in the night. And so one of the biggest things, the way our house was set up, again, when you walked in the front door, for those who have vision, who can visualize very well, when you walk through the front door, again, the front door was a burglar bar door with a screen. So you walk through the front door and you got the living room right here on your left-hand side and then our bedroom right here in front of it, on the right-hand side, and then you had to go up to go to the bathroom. And so anytime we would leave our space, we had to see him. It wasn't no, it had no choice. And so this dude was literally one of the most grittiest dude I ever met. I watched him. Now as an adult, I can tell he was very greedy in what he could get. And so this time my mother stayed very intoxicated. Again, my mom had a lot of pain going on at that time. But my mother said she stayed very intoxicated in this time frame. And so with her intoxication came a lot of not paying attention. And that reaped problems. And so the incident that started it all was my mother had this thing about us saying goodbye or giving people hugs. And I'm very much against that with my daughter. I do not make her hug anyone if she's not comfortable. I will not do that, period. This guy was definitely a poisonous snake. That could be just slithery. It reminds me of Adam and Eve, and he was that snake in the garden. That is what this dude was. And so, as I said in here, he had my mother fooled because she could ask for anything and he would gladly make a deal, but shortly found out that she didn't know her deal was with the devil. He had ways about him, and then there was so much about him. To start, I hated the way he would look at me. I couldn't do anything without him looking or even speaking to me. He would look at me as if I was a snack. And then when he spoke, it was a voice that gave me poisonous anxiety. The way our home was set up, you would have to go through the living room to get to the bathroom. So when going to the bathroom, it felt like a place full of mouth traps and you better walk carefully. My mother had a habit of telling us we had to say hello and give a hug. It didn't matter how uncomfortable it was. We had no choice. And so the night that a lot of this happened, I remember going to the bathroom and there was the thief. My mother had indicated that it was time for us to go to bed, put your pajamas on. And it was the yes, ma'am. And I'm walking quickly. And my mom was like, whoa, whoa. Mm-mm. And so after changing and getting into my own space, my mother was like, you know, give a hug. And I said, you know, we had to give a hug. And again, this man, And I said in here, with his arms out, I could smell him, and he smelled like a month worth of Georgia summer heat and no shower. She told me again to hug him, and I did because she didn't like to repeat herself. This is a thing I hate to do as an adult. I know where I got it from. Anyway, I gave him one, but it was like a church hug. The hug where you pat someone on the back and nothing but your hand touched their backs. Chills was going through my body, but I did as I was told, and I did it quickly. I went back to my room with the white walls with green crayon writings. I finished getting ready for bed, and once there, my sleep was for a short period of time. And so, all right, and so this is where we begin to get into conversation. And so as we get into conversation, we're going to take a break, take a 30-second break, and we're going to get into this conversation. And again, I pray that you guys are prayed up, as this is for mature conversation. So we'll be back in 30 seconds.
Authentic transparency, forgiveness to freedom. Come and read a story about my faith. Learn all about my forgiveness and forgiving of others, how I embrace the freedom that I currently have. You can get Authentic Transparency, Forgiveness to Freedom at Amazon and IamShatoria.com.
All right, so we are back. If you're just not joining us, I am your girl, Shatoria Christian, the owner of the owner host of I Am Shatoria Brand. And we are today speaking about my most difficult chapter in the Bible, in the book, Authentic Transparency, Forgiveness to Freedom, as we are talking about chapter 4, as we call 7 in the book. Forgiveness, Authentic Transparency, Forgiveness to Freedom. So as you see, it is there on the screen. So if you do not have it, you can definitely get it at IamShatoria.com /merch, where you can get a signed copy from me. And so again, if you are just not joining us, we will also have a disclaimer at the bottom that is strolling, that states mature content warning. Please be advised that this contains adult content. This includes conversation and information of sexual and graphic content and violence. Listener discretion is advised. So, and so what we look off is, you know, I'm explaining this fat guy that my mother had as a friend, who unfortunately is the reason why I am, you know, in a better position in my life right now, though. I'm not going to pretend, you know. And so I am telling this story because it needs to be told. We get into family secrets and we don't want to talk about things. So this guy, as the name I have for him, is the thief. I will not reveal his name, as, you know, it is what it is at this point. So where I left off at is that, and this is how things seems to happen. And so, you know, my mother was the individual to tell you to hug somebody, love on them, and this whole time on. And it was just, I just did not feel comfortable. And so do understand I'm going to be reading pieces of my book as I'm going through it. And do understand I am quite okay. There's still some emotional moments. The crazy part about this book is I read this book. This is the one chapter I still skip. This chapter is in very much detail. So if you read it, you know. This chapter is very much in detail. So for me to even be speaking on it today, and again, I'm good. It's just, you know, type of situation. So, you know, I'm okay. So in this particular, you know, I talk about how it started, and I talk about the fact that when the night it started, this is when my sleep started to come very shortening. I remember laying in the bed, and I don't know if it's because I was the oldest, what it was, or is it still him and my mom, mate? I don't know. What I do know is I'm glad it was me and not my siblings. And that's just being honest. And so I remember this tap on my shoulder waking me up out of sleep. And with him waking me up out of my sleep, y'all, it was a lot. And so I really thought it was my siblings needing to go to the restroom. One of my sisters needed to go to the restroom because the way the house was set up and it was dark. And it wasn't one of my sisters, it was him. And so again, with him waking me up in the middle of the night, it's just a reminder of the thief comes in the middle of the night. And so I remember him placing his hand over my mouth and he told me not to say anything. And I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't like it. It didn't feel well. Something just didn't feel right. And so I remember, you know, my little bitty life flashing before my eyes. But I remember things just going. And it was just like, oh, my God, what is going on? He had told me, I've been, I said, word, be quiet. And so I did. And so I remember him leading me to this bathroom that we had, and I knew my mother was asleep. Oh my God. Because I remember asking where she was at and he told me, don't even worry about it. And so as we entered the bathroom all of a sudden became different. I don't know if anybody ever been in a space where, you know what something looked like, but in that moment, it didn't seem that way. And so, I remember I just felt so claustrophobic at that time. Everything was just close. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. And with him, it was just uncomfortable. It's my personal space. I just eat everything. And I remember him closing the door and locking it behind us. And I remember crying because I did not know what was about to happen. And I promise you, hearing him closing the door and locking it, my flesh became increasingly hot. Shaking, upset, don't know, what are we doing? Hold on. My thought process, is he gonna kill me? What was it? What it is? What is this doing? I don't know. And so it made him upset that I cried. It made him upset that tears flowed. He literally jacked me up and told me to be quiet in that moment. And the way he spoke was almost how my mother would say it. And remind you, when I said in the chapter Foundation, my mom was like, you better be quiet. You know, I had it in my head, like, we don't cry. We don't do anything. But at that moment, I couldn't help but crying. And, you know, you stop crying for a moment. And for some reason, I just remember the tears were still flowing. Let me hold it together. I don't know what he was going to do. I say here in the book that the size of his hand reminded me of the Hulk. And like, I promise you, it was a lot. And so standing in front of the sink in the mirror, and I saw my face with his hand. I had a tiny face, so his hands seemed like they could just cover my entire face. It was something I wish I could not have seen. I closed my eyes thinking this could help, but it scared me because I didn't know what was next. I remember, and I won't say it. And so I remember his eyes, y'all. His eye, you know how you could just look at someone's eyes and just see certain things. And at this time in my life, I didn't realize how much discernment God was blessing me with, but I just saw a lot of evilness in this man at that time. And I remember him telling me how beautiful I was and how beautiful I was, like my mom, and just, and I'm seven, that I'm beautiful, I'm gorgeous, I'm just pretty. And he kept making this humming sound. And I say in my book, as he kept making this humming sound, it sounded like a buzzing noise or as a bee sound. For a very long time, any buzzing noise I heard bothered my soul, and it did. Y'all, I hated buzz noises. Bees, anything. I hated it. And this is well into adulthood. I hated it for the longest. And I kid you not, I hated it until 2013. And so, I hated it with a passion. And again, these are things I did not tell my husband, but I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. And hate is a very strong word, a word I usually do not use. But in that moment, I hated them as I could hate. And so I remember trying to move. And oh, my God, that did not work for him. He was not happy. I remember him just fixating on me, touching me. He made me touch him in ways that just was so inappropriate. It was just too much. And as he kept looking me into my face, I felt something weird on my lips as I fr- as I closed my eyes, it was his lips touching mine. And I promise you, I thought it was the most, you know, as a kid, you're like, ooh, guys got, you know, cooties or whatever. At this time, it was, wait, what are you doing? Like, oh, wait a minute. Nobody does that. And so this is the first person that kissed me. This is the first person that has kissed me inappropriately. We're talking about tongue kissing, this grown, oversized man. And that's what's sitting in front of me. And I describe it in here as his tongue was like a wet snake in my mouth that was trying to find a place to nest. And I don't, if you are, again, I don't care for snakes and stuff like that. But for a snake to find its place and its spot to nest and rest, that is what it, that's, yes, it, I'm gonna leave that right there. Yes, that was, yeah. And so for me, me trying to move my body or whatever, he was not hearing it. And I remember his hands into places. And so one of the things that I'm very adamant about is teaching my daughter good touch, bad touch, and those type of things. And so at this time, I have not had any clues about good touch, bad touch. However, I knew in that moment, this was not a good touch, period, at all. This man's hands was in my underwear, touching my private parts, and it completely horrified me. It completely drained me. It was like, wait, what are we doing? When I moved his hands, that irked him to the core. And so one of the hardest moments of my life is this man forcing me to do acts that violated every inch of my whole soul, my life, and what as a child should not endure. And the crazy part about it is it's the smirk he had on his face. It's the sexy talk that he did. And in my head, I'm like, I'm lost. What are we doing? Like, what this man's whole being disturbed my soul. He is the first person, unfortunately, where sex was involved, and we're talking about oral sex and regular sex. I remember this as a torture session. And so as he talked to me, I did not realize some of the things he had said. He was like treated like a popsicle, and he patted me on my head. Like, that stuff to this day annoys the crap out of me. And as I wrote in the book, it says he said to treat it like a popsicle, and he patted me on my head. As I did, I was told, what I remember was gagging and not doing much, but he warned me to not bite him. I promise you, y'all, look at here. Probably would have been what I done, but I was afraid to die in this moment. And that's being honestly real. I was afraid of death in this moment. I was afraid of my mother in this moment, because again, I don't know if she knows. And as I said in the book, the thought came across my mind, but I didn't know how this would have ended. He had his hand on my head, and I was pulling up. And was pulling my hair and yelling at me and telling me what I needed to do. At one point, I told him no, and I tried to move my face away. That didn't go over well, as he reminded me that there was nothing I could do, as if I said anything to my mother, she wouldn't believe me anyway. The sad part about this was I actually believed him. He kept saying how she loves him and that she would believe anything he said. She won't believe a lying daughter. He forced me to keep going, and what I know was this was the most sickening feeling ever. His whole being disturbed me. I don't know how much longer before I became numb and had no more tears to shed. After he was done forcing me to give him oral sex, he became upset because I didn't know what I was doing. Go figure. He had me get up, and I thought I was good and this is over, but that wasn't the end, as he was not done and had other plans. One of the hardest part about this, as this was definitely the part that absolutely was in my head, one of the worst moments ever. The worst moment had not had yet came, as I remember him touching me as if I was a grown woman, and I'm not, I'm a child. This is what we're doing. And so I wasn't developed at all. He act like I was. He act like I was developed. He act like I had body parts for days. I don't know. I remember him taking off my clothes. I was about 50 to 60 pounds at this point. Maybe not even that. I was 7. I was very small. And so, I didn't carry much weight. However, in this moment, I felt like he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. If I say no, if I scream, if I yell, and in this moment, I won't lie. Again, I believe that my mother would not believe me. And so I remember him doing the things that he did to me. He took my clothes off and he put himself inside of me. And I remember blacking out. It hurt. I remember just out of it. As I said in the book, and I'm trying to find the most appropriate ways to say it. So as I allow my eyes to trace the circles of the floor as he entered me, this is the moment my soul left me. My eyes popped open and I let out a scream. I begged him to stop and I told him it hurt. I tried to move by crawling away and it seemed I made things worse. My head was almost at the doorknob and he snatched me so hard back to the floor. He held my head harder to the floor and I felt like he had many hands because I felt like he was pressing all of my body as I lay flat on the floor. I could hear him moaning and he wasn't listening to me. He got rough with me and I can tell he was angry because each thrust got worse. With every thrust that he gave, it seemed like I was dying. He was enjoying himself and breathing hard. I could hear his moans and the words that he spoke, same things like, you know, I'm your daddy and you like this. When I asked again for him to stop, he would chant things like, I know it feels good and just relax. He put more pressure on my body. I can feel his sweat as it was dripping on me like running water. I felt nasty and still wanted to throw up. And out of nowhere, I did. My face laid in my vomit as I had nothing else to give, no one to save me. And after all the tears had dried up, I then gave up. He wasn't done as he decided to move from my vagina to my rear end. As he rearranged my position, he placed his hands over my mouth. And when he entered, I screamed and it was his hands so no one could hear me. I remember kicking and screaming as this pain was tearing me apart. I screamed for him to stop and I begged. I can tell he released himself as he took a deep breath and got up. He was done. He got up. He cleaned himself up. I remember this man, or I won't even say that, but I remember this person violating me in such a way to where I remember him cleaning himself up and he cleans himself up. He made me clean myself up, made me go to bed. And let me tell you, walking to my room was like the green mile. I got back in my bed that I shared with one of my sisters and I cried a silent cry. This night haunted me and I don't remember getting my sleep that night because I fear he would come back. I know when I got up the next day, he wasn't there. My mother was in a good mood and I was limping. She asked me what was wrong and all I could hear was him telling me that if I said anything, she wouldn't believe me. So I told her, I don't know. She didn't seem concerned or worried. It was like I was hoping she would ask something that would lead to the question, but that never came. This night became the first night, but it wasn't the last. This event went on for about a year and some change and more than what I can count. I wish there was someone who could save me, but I was scared to say anything as I didn't know what troubles would come from it. After this frightful night, my days became long and my fear grew like a tree. The thief planted fear, hate, lack of trust, pain, and a loss of self all in the first night. There was no heart, soul, or spirit to fight back. I accept the fact that this would go on and I didn't disobey him anymore after that. This became a routine as I remember going to my room and getting to bed. I knew if he was there when I went to bed that he would come and see me in that night. His shadow wasn't small and couldn't be missed. I couldn't pretend I was sleeping or anything. This was our routine. Getting used to something that wasn't normal was confusing. I couldn't cry anymore. I had no more tears. I couldn't yell or scream. I had no voice, but I had more fear. The type of fear that left me crippled in trusting anyone. My bleeding became less and less, and being numb became my drug. Every time he would, every way he could have his way, I would look at the popcorn ceiling or that ugly floor with circles. That night was the altar of my life. He fractured my soul at 7, but planted so much discard lived in me and my spirit. He didn't care, and he had no heart either. He stole that part of my childhood that destroyed me growing into a woman. In my mind, life wasn't easy already, and now this. The hardest part of my life is knowing that he was my first for everything, but not my first love. This is part of me as an adult that haunted me for years, because when people talk about their first, I can't. My first isn't something I was proud of, but became accustomed to. At 7, you don't know life. What you know is playing with dolls and being with friends. At 7, I knew fear, being scared, not being wanted, numb and worthless. Over time with him, my heart became numb to love. Every night, he never changed what he would say. He would always say I was pretty. And you know what's so funny, y'all? After a while, the thief had disappeared, but he had never left my spirit. And so one of the things that I talk about is that this man was the first for a lot. For years, I lied about when I lost my virginity. I would say 9. It was actually 7. And as an adult, I fought this spirit for the longest time ever. So I had to find the courage to finally let it out and just to be honest about it. And again, I didn't tell my mother until April 2013. And at this time, I'm 30. Yeah, I'm 30 at this time. I told my mom, and my mom said, I knew something wasn't right. And I said, you didn't know? She goes, no. But she said, I knew something wasn't right. She said that I had changed up. She said she figured some things out days like later after that, but she did not know. And at that time, she just wasn't in the space to ask. She didn't know what to ask. She didn't know how to ask. And she asked me, she said, how long? And I told her about a year and some change, as far as I can remember. And I have no hate for this person. To my understanding, this person is deceased. I'm not quite sure. But one of the things that I am proud of is that I'm able to find my, I was able to tell my mother, I was able to tell my grandmother. And my grandmother has said it made sense. Because I remember when I was living with my grandmother, my dad came back in the picture. And I remember I was 13 and he wanted me to come like every other weekend. And I just was not comfortable with that at all. I didn't want to. I didn't want to at all. And my grandmother said she remembered my grandfather saying, some ain't right. She doesn't want to go. We're not going to make her go. And my grandparents did not make me go at all when it came down to that. I was like, I don't want to. And my grandma was like, well, I don't want to. I don't want to spend a week. I don't know him. I don't want to. And my grandfather recognized something wasn't right. He just didn't know. And the crazy part, I never got a chance to tell him because he passed in 2003. So I didn't say anything until 10 years later. But the fact that I can say now that, okay, granted, you knew someone right. But I am blessed to be able to tell my mother and for my mother to apologize to me and say, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I'm sorry I did not protect you. I'm sorry that I didn't see you. And I'm sorry we allowed this to happen. And for me, that was a lot, because at 7, nobody spoke up for me. Nobody protected me. this went on to literally, no kidding, almost when I went to go live with my aunt, which we'll get into chapter 5. I said, yes, we'll get into that. And literally it was like, so like I said, I was 7 at this time. By the time I lived with my aunt, I was 9. And I dealt with a thief for a year and some change, probably longer. I became an adult, and I mean, I became numb to all of it. And so the Bible, and I put it in here, and I wrote, and I thought I put it up here. I did. So it says here, weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. Psalms 30, chapter 30, verse 5. And so weeping definitely was at night. But my joy, I have so much joy now, but I also have a lot of peace. I have a lot of healing that was happening. I will say this, and I wrote it in a book. I had a lot of years of very bad sleeping. Crazy part to this day, I sleep with TV on. A lot of that came from my deployment. And so let me be honest and let me put this out here, because people is going to say, because now that I'm out of the military, I'm going to say what I got to say, and then everybody be all right. So even after this situation, even after giving myself away for years, coming into the military, we have a lot of women who, and men, men and women, where there are definitely unspoken situations. And so I'm speaking about my military part is not in the book. But now that I'm out, like I said, you know, I was raped 3 times, 1 round deployment. So being on deployment and being raped, my first year in the military, finding someone in your room and being raped by this individual 2, nothing been done with him. People really not listening, because that's just who he was. He was a ladies' man. And then again, from a friend who I went on a date with, his friend, and that turned to be very just disaster within itself. And then again, going on deployment, I became numb again. Because at this point, I'm not giving myself away. It's just... I remember it like it was yesterday. And so I finally had to just cut some things off. And so for years, I have slept with TV and stuff on because I don't like shadows. And it took me years just to be okay. And so I'm going to give the flowers to my husband, because my husband makes me feel, I mean, outside of Christ. So let me make sure that's understandable. But my husband makes me feel safe and okay. I'm not afraid. I'm good. I'm really okay. So I'm so thankful for that peace that I now have. So yes, for years, because of my deployment, I came back, I sleep with TV on, lights. To this day, I still do. I sleep with TV on. And I ask God every day for just that sleep. I will say, you know, I even, you know, the military is like, hey, you have PTSD, because I kid you not, if I'm out by myself, this may sound crazy, but I'll walk across the street if there's too many men. If I need to go get gas, my husband is not letting me get gas at night, period. He's like, nah, wait till the morning. I'll go get it right now. No. And the crazy part is it's still there, that mode. And so, as this man literally imprinted himself, I am thankful for the healing that I have. All right. I'm thankful for the healing. And I pray that as you guys read this, this is one of the hardest chapters, like I said before, but I pray that you all get the healing that you need as in life. Things hurt, things happen. And know that it's okay to be honest. Like, it's okay to be honest. It's okay to be vulnerable. That's what I am right now. I'm vulnerable and I'm okay with it. I'm good. I promise you I'm good. I'm in a good space. I really am. And so as we end this, I didn't get so deep into it. Like I said, if you have not read it, you can definitely read it because it's very, very detailed. But I also did this tonight, today, because people's voices are not heard and they need to be heard. So I am letting my voice be heard. I'm saying what I got to say, regardless how anybody feel about it. And so I don't know if this man is dead or alive because I was told he was deceased, but I don't know. But I pray that if he is alive, he knows I'm okay. I am. Yes, he set a precedent. He set a tone, but my God is bigger. And so I am grateful for the healing because, again, I don't have to be so scared to be a mom to a girl. And I don't have to be afraid to protect her. So I definitely thank my mother for that moment of transparency when she said, I'm sorry. Because if only people knew what that did for me, that I'm sorry meant a lot. And so as you listen to this, I pray that those who are still holding on to those who have taken something away from them, that you just say, you know what, God, let me get the forgiveness I need so I can heal properly. And so again, I thank you guys for this particular episode, as this is definitely a somber one, but I cannot leave without always saying to walk in love, live fearlessly, and have a whole lot of faith. We will see you guys in the next episode, which we're talking about. Chapter 5. I said yes. I'm sorry. I said yes. Get ready as we are preparing for that episode. Thank you guys for joining me today. Have a blessed one and talk to you later.